half hour of Mind Webs. Short stories from the worlds of speculative fiction. This Mind Web story comes from the book edited by Roger Elwood, Future Quest. It's a story by C.L. Grant titled, Weep No More, Old Lady. During the past few weeks, I've been struck with an almost desperate feeling of empathy with anyone who is or has been imprisoned. I imagine I know exactly what it's like to be stripped naked of whatever freedoms there may be, to be forcibly placed in a room so isolated that it precludes any meaningful communication with the so-called outside world. It does happen, of course, and in fact happens quite often. There are various kinds of prisoners and different types of wardens. In my case, I suppose there should really be some attempt at formulating a distinction in order that I not be confused with, oh, say, a prisoner of war. I myself have tried on one or two occasions to do just that. But it's awfully hard to be objective. You see, in this cell, such decidedly unpleasant and even morbid thoughts come easily, most of the time unbidden and usually from reacting over-emotionally to my predicament and indulging in a tasteless bath of self-pity. But I cannot be sure that I'm not lowering myself to rationalizing when I eventually get hold of myself and contend that I'm not a prisoner at all. Not all the time, anyway. In fact, this place is as comfortable as a small room can be. When I begin to forget things, I stretch out on the floor and reestablish its length and width at 9 and 10 feet, respectively. By standing squarely in the center of the room and raising my hand and arm over my head, estimate the height at approximately 8 feet. There's a wonderfully soft double bed that waits within one wall. If you look carefully between the animal patterns on the wallpaper, you can just make out the almost invisible lines which mark its place. It really is comfortable, and I sleep quite well. There's a bookcase that hides one complete wall and has been thoroughly stocked with locked room mysteries. I've read none of them. I never will. Among the others, I have my favorites, but I'm afraid that they will pale soon. Perhaps I shall be free by then. But damn it, I'm not a prisoner. I'm a brainchild. Oh, it's easy to dream, and less than easy to do something about your dreams. When I tend toward petulance in irrational moments, I lay the blame for my condition on my parents. Justifiable in some ways, but not wholly so. As intelligent as I am, I should have been able to foresee something like this happening. Father was not really an extraordinary person. A professor of ancient history who had a fondness for dry sherry, leather upholstery, and the Boston Red Sox, and Rex Stout. He enjoyed being alone. Mother, on the other hand, was a joiner, a president of so many women's clubs that often when I was younger, I'd read in the newspaper something like, President visits Brazil, and would run through the house crying because she didn't say goodbye to me. She had a fondness for cognac, blue satin draperies, the Boston Bruins, and Ellery Queen. I have dreams of fairies and goblins and elves and visions of sugar plums and the big rock candy mountain. My parents were beautifully matched, and I was their only child. Occasionally, they were sister, and I often wondered what I was to be then, their distorted mirror. I'm blonde, have brown eyes, and barely perceptibly buck-toothed, gently hook-nosed. Slightly on the heavy side, and though I try to hide it painfully, pigeon-toed. But they were handsome, and I am not. They were my parents, and I am their son. They caused my being. They molded me. They were the ones, rightly or not, who fed me with knowledge and saw to it that my potential as a genius was exploited. And it's very hard to try to undo all that which has been done. Jesus, it's lonely. Special schools, public schools and public children apparently cannot handle me. Special schools and special tutors were the damnedest educational theories were the forces that drove me headlong out of my early years. And through it all were the binding webs of ecology, astronomy, philosophy, geology, and mathematics, not to mention theology, ontology, biology, and oceanography. Freedom of choice. Study what I wanted. Even now, I grin a little remembering the expressions on my teachers' faces when I soared past them so rapidly that my incessant whys and hows toppled their egos and crushed them. Of course, I was too young to know that then. They merely looked humorous to me. Frustrating, I must have cried myself to sleep 1,000 times for the understanding I was unable to achieve in depth being a vampire, and it frightened me, scared me. God, but I was scared. God, I'm scared. God, I'm lonely. Sometimes I dream of gazelle and lions and tigers and elephants and Batman and the Lone Ranger. Did I tell you I was a brain child? I am, you know. Oh, I'm sleepy. But it's not time for bed to come. Not now. Later. At 8 o'clock. It's the experiment, you see. But don't tell anyone. It's a secret. Then there was a time of crisis, his mother calls it in her book, which was 23 months on the Times bestseller list. The names were changed, but that still made me rather famous to those in the know. The book's supposed to be fiction. I hate her for that. Well, it became readily apparent that even geniuses of my particular ilk had their limits of absorption. Father's wobbly little Renaissance man was turning out to be just another bright kid who peaked a few years before anyone else. Mother was only disappointed, but Father's face would redden and his voice fairly thundered throughout the house when I was totally unable to assimilate another iota of material. And he damn near cried when I began. My paintings became static, my compositions stale, and together we pronounced my academic future as bleak as an English moor in autumn. I hated that. I really did. And I raged and threw tantrums and even wept at my helplessness. One of the few childlike things I ever did. Enter the government, which shares the blame, and I cannot forgive them, for they knew exactly what they were doing, the bastards. I never saw the president or a cabinet member or even an assistant to an assistant secretary. See, for me, the government was Mr. Bernard Polaski, as plain a man you'll never see. He appeared out of nowhere, and I used to sit at the bottom step in the hall and fall asleep to the drone of his monotonous voice. He came once a week, then every night talking and listening and arguing for about an hour or so, and then there'd be nothing left of him when he'd gone. No feeling, no atmosphere, no odor, no memory of him. It was just as if he had never been. I doubt seriously that I'd know him if he walked through the door this moment. Only there is no door or windows, just an air and an ice cream cone or two. However, what turned out to be the final conversation did finally believe I spent the rest of the evening by Mother's chair, clutching her arm and grinning. Richard, Father said to me, Richard, this gentleman would like very much to assist us, rather assist you with your problem. Your mother and I have done all that we can. I think you're intelligent enough to realize that without some further, perhaps even artificial guidance, you'll remain just about where you are. Yes, Father, I was grinning. Did I say that already? Do you know what the problem is? And that question, naturally, was for the benefit of the government. And Father loved to show me off. He was kind of proud. Yes, Father, I said, but did not move away from Mother's side. And to put it very, very simply, it seems like I'm all stored up. As if there's no place for anything to go anymore, partly because I've concentrated on all subjects instead of one. Partly because I'm unable to tap unused areas of my brain for further storage and recall. And what portions are being utilized are overburdened because they cannot strengthen themselves to handle the load. I'm starting to forget things. It's kind of like a solution which has so much salt dissolved in it that eventually the salt begins to reform and precipitate. Yet it was all play acting, nothing more. Father was proud of me and wanted me very much to be chosen for something. Did he think of me? I was picked, of course. And so undramatically that I was quite disappointed. Every 2 weeks, I was carted off to a dingy office in Boston where all I got were pills. Pills. I could hardly believe it. Pills, for crying out loud. After so many stories and articles I had read about experimental surgery and serums and injections, all to give you knowledge, and all of them so tragically resolved. Pills. When I first saw them, I thought they were aspirin. Mother and father were terribly excited and so let down when I was unable to share in their enthusiasm. But believe me, there's nothing at all exciting about pills, which I took, and they worked. So I climbed from my stagnant plateau and continued to reach greedily for more. I specialized in nothing and recalled everything, and eventually the price was paid. The price was me. My parents loved me, you see, and let me go. I saw the wisdom in this move, and since they were allowed to come and see me regularly until I began this experiment and forbade it, there was little of the pain of parting, tears mostly, and effusive promises to write. They drove me all the way to Princeton, where I was to live and study. Father was cheerful, as indeed he should have been. His only son was at the top and still climbing for the fame no professor could realize. It was a beautiful day, the fall, if I remember correctly. And even though Mother tended to sniffle and wipe her eyes once in a while, she laughed too, and it was beautiful. Father sang badly. Does he still? But gustily. He had never brought himself to learn more than one line of a song, and that not always correctly. I knew them all, but never helped him. You understand? So it was, "Weep no more, old lady," a million times from Connecticut to New Jersey. And when we were finally alone in the car in the shadows of 100 trees as old as the country, Mother hugged me and Father shook my hand. He told me I was a man. I wanted to cry. I dream of ankles and thighs and breasts and lips and Raggedy Ann and Mamie Stover. When he left, he was still singing, only now as if he were going to a funeral. So melodramatic, when I can remember it. But then Father was a great actor. It was nearly 2 years before I discovered exactly what the government wanted with me. Although they had moved me to Princeton, had given me my own cottage and let me go my own way, not once did they express more than a passing interest in my various inventions, scientific studies, paintings, or musical compositions. But while I was puzzling their intentions and swallowing that miserable aspirin in varying amounts at staggered times, I was in an earthbound heaven. For a short time, I experienced great concern over the side effects of those pills, but soon realized the dangers were minimal, if they existed at all. Meanwhile, I prepared myself physically, embarking upon a program of rigorous exercise, push-ups, 1, 2, buckle my shoe, walking and jogging to keep limber and nimble, Jack be quick, isotonic and isometric interludes to break the routine of my work. I almost wished I had permitted mirrors so that I could have seen myself grow. But obviously the government was not treating me as an Anglo-Saxon Leonardo for purely altruistic reasons. And eventually I tired of my being placed on exhibit, however limited. I began brooding and complaining. I baited every visitor and demanded explanations. When my mother cried from the moment she saw me on her last visit, Father kept her away. Or did I forbid them to come? I am quite obviously the means, I would say. So, what the hell are the ends? I became obdurate in my refusal to do anything at all. I allowed myself to grow slovenly and crude in my daily progress reports. Today I developed a self-flushing toilet and mastered Kama Sutra number 56. I threatened to run away. And lo and behold, but didn't Mr. Bernard Polaski pop out of the woodwork and ask for a moment of my time? Time is a man-made fabrication, I said. I loved being pompous and obtuse, though pomposity in a 16-year-old is bound to be ludicrous. I know he thought so because he was about to lose his grip on his anonymity and slap me. Sit down, he ordered. I did. The grass was warm in August. and I was spending most of my time outside in the backyard. Richard, we're all pretty proud of you, you know. I knew it, of course, but I had a good heated feeling in my cheeks and chest on hearing it. You've proven a number of things for us, Richard. I'm ever so glad, I said, as caustically as I could. He ignored me. For more than having merely a photographic memory, Richard, if you'll pardon the layman's term, you have also developed a power of reasoning, albeit a limited understanding, which has kept a remarkably even pace with your memory. The pills don't work on everyone, you see. This was the first confirmation I'd had that I wasn't alone. But at the time, it was no consolation. In fact, Richard, you're the only person with extraordinarily high intelligence that has benefited more than just a little from the experiment. I was grinning, even though I knew it was an immature way of covering my embarrassment. He didn't seem to notice. He rambled along the same vein for several minutes, floundering in a sea of platitudes and eventually running out of words. He smiled and stared at me. Okay, I said. Okay, so? So what? That's it, Richard. You wanted to know what was going on, didn't you? You were observed, you were tested. And though the pills will continue to increase your memory and ability to learn, the cumulative effects from now on will be so small as to be practically negligible. If you must have it crudely, Richard, you worked. I worked. Like a rat that can run the maze and avoid the shocks and answer the bell and slap the lever. I worked. Worked like a damn new machine. Mr. Polaski was distressed. He smiled as he patted me on the shoulder and tousled my hair. You see, Richard, he said, because obviously I didn't. You see, several important people were concerned that those pills would make everyone in the country a genius, and thus leave no one left for the actual manual labor so vital to any society's viability. But you and the others have proved this worry to be without foundation. There is a limit, Richard, for everyone, even you. Each person can go just so high and no higher. Do you remember that saturated solution you told me about when we first met? Well, even with the pills, the analogy fits. A little bit frightening, I guess, isn't it? But you will be allowed to stay here and work if you want. Remember, though, you'll eventually reach the same problem you had before we came into the picture. So you see, son, you worked. You're a hero. A bona fide hero. Your country is grateful. I remember screaming at Polaski and even throwing a well-aimed, perfectly unexpected punch to his midsection. I dream of silver bells and cockle shells and Dante's hell and wishing wells. To be truthful, I behave like a fool. I even vowed eternal revenge until I realized how silly it was. Instead, I continued my work, and this time an active interest was exhibited toward my projects. I also consented to live in Princeton. What a lovely community. I think it's in New Jersey. And when I grew tired of remembering it all, I went on a trip across the country and came back. Because I have a new experiment. Women. Have you ever sat in a park, or walked in a forest, or waded in an ocean with a girl who at that particular moment is the most beautiful creature in the world, and found you could not keep from commenting sagely on the gold content of salt water, or the average lifespan of conifers versus deciduous trees, or the advantages of sod over seed? Have you ever tried to make friends with another kid who can't understand a word you're saying and ends up either laughing at you or beating you up? When you're 17, a man, a genius, I am, a bore. You're lonely. You can't be scientific playing a scratch game of baseball. You can't be wise at a junior prom. Oh, hell. But in this cell, it has dolls and cutouts and comic books and bubble gum and trading cards. Electric trains and television and a radio and college pennants and model cars and a baseball glove and a football, a record player, a tape recorder. My favorite record was made especially for me. It's Dad singing "Weep No More, Old Lady," over and over and over again. Once in a while, I think I can catch Mom laughing in the background. The government pays me a pension. I built the room myself. I'm a genius, you see, and tend to act a bit weird sometimes. The new experiment is what I told them. I'm trying very hard to remember and forget. But I'm 17, and that's a very long time. There are no mirrors. Did I tell you how Dad tried to kid me about being a vampire and how it scared me? And I keep telling myself that my hands are awfully rough from all my work and that I don't really have any wrinkles or gray hair. I'm only 17. Do you understand? I'm only 17, I think.
My only child, be not so blind. There are no words, no words. Their bodies close to freezing, their feelings fine. The morning small. Too small to see their ways with breathing, their evening tall. My only child, remember well the words that you are told. For some of them, it is only easy to survive. Their hands are old, their faces cold, their bodies close to freezing, their feelings far. The morning small, the evening tall. Man and wife are feasting the time that lies behind. At home in sweetness and delight, drinking the bitter wine. Their hands are old, their faces cold, their bodies close to freezing, their feelings fine. The morning small, the evening tall. Thank you.